that trip to Israel we had? Did we have fun or did we have fun? It was awesome. 2 years from now, I want to go back. I want you all to come. I'd like to speak with you today about a very important subject that kind of arises naturally from our Torah portion, and that has to do with something that I call a lost art, and that is the ability to converse meaningfully with other people I'm talking about, right? Now, think about the political debates, right? Need I say more? You know what I mean? It's not talking with. It's just putting one another down. The political culture is degenerated. But not just, and that's an extreme example, but I've noticed sitting in Starbucks and kind of not intentionally listening to conversations, but just talking, you know, and rather just listening casually. And I find that most of the conversations are really quite superficial, it seems. Although occasionally the people who hog the whole table, pardon the expression, they're there for business or study, but otherwise conversations are relatively superficial. I've noticed, too, that among my colleagues, I mean guys my age, even professional religious people, very little capacity for what I would consider real dialogue and conversation. Bunch of guys get together, and if you say, hey, you know, man, I had a headache last night, I'm making something up. The other guy goes, you think you had a headache? You know what I mean? Oh. You see, very little of, you know, tell me about that. I mean, was it really bad? Now, headache is not a big deal, but just the idea of men oftentimes have very little capacity for a kind of competition-less conversation where we draw one another out and we say, well, tell me more about that. I want to hear more about what you're talking about. I want to make sure I understand you when you say such and such. Guys, right? We're not so good at that. Very, very few men are. It's all about conversation. And of course, in our passage, we learn something about not so much conversing with one another. We can derive some insight about that, and we will. But it's more about the conversation with God and Him with us. So let me just describe the end of the Parashat Tetzaveh, where we were last week, and something in this Parsha, two things actually, which help us understand how we relate and talk to God and how He talks to us. So the first image, if you will, or picture, is the incense altar. Now, those of you who came to Israel, we visited a place called the Temple Mount? The Temple Institute, yeah. And they actually, these people have created, according to the specifications of Jewish law, the exact accoutrements that'll be, should there be another temple at some point. And one of the accoutrements, one of the pieces of furniture, if you will, was about yay high, and it's about this big, and all the specific directions are given in the Torah. And it's where the Kohen would put incense on the altar. Incense. And in the Torah, it says this, I'll read to you. This is from this week's Parsha. You were to make an altar for the burning of incense, make it of acacia wood, poles to carry it, etc. That's actually from Tetzaveh. But here, from this week's Parsha, then the Lord said to Moses, take fragrant spices, gum, resin, onkia, and galbanum, and pure frankincense of equal amounts, and make a fragrant blend of incense, the work of a perfumer. It is to be salted and pure and sacred. And it says, don't make any of this for yourselves. You're going to be in big trouble if you make this at home for yourself. This is sacred. This is sacred. This admixture is supposed to be burnt on the altar. And so imagine the scene. The Kohen would come, and he would burn the incense on the altar. Now Maimonides, the great commentator, Jewish commentator, says, he takes a very practical view of this. He says that the incense on the altar was to mask the smell of all those animal sacrifices, lest the Mishkan smell like a slaughterhouse. All right. All right. We can go with that. That's okay. I think that Maimonides was onto something. But there's another way of understanding the incense, particularly if we were to think of the image in the book of Revelation of the incense on the altar. Now, the book of Revelation uses a lot of temple imagery and to teach lessons about the end, about the what they call the eschaton, or the end, okay? So the seventh seal, there's a series of seals that are broken, and this is at the culmination of a very tough period that the world will go through, and shortly after this, Yeshua returns to make everything right. So it's at the breaking of the seventh seal, and when he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. One of my favorite verses from the book of Revelation. It suggests something impending. You've heard the expression, the calm before the storm?
Yes.
I think that's exactly what we have here. So silence in heaven, it's a dramatic pause. And well, we can talk about pauses in music and verbal pauses and how powerful silence can really be. And I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and seven trumpets were given to them. And those of you in Israel, you remember there were two types of trumpets? Remember in the showcase? One is the one that goes like that. What's that called? We use the shofar, right? But then there is the tudwadi, the long silver trumpet. That's what this is talking about, okay? So another angel who had the golden censer came and stood by the altar, and with him was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all God's people on the golden altar in front of the throne. And the smoke of the incense, together with the prayers of God's people, went up before God from the angel's hand. So here, what do we have? Here we have wafting into the sky is the incense, but the picture is us talking with God. Now keep that image in mind as I move to the second picture from this week's Parsha, which is Moses, has to do with Moses and his problem and his talking to God and God talking to him. See, the picture that I'm trying to paint for you here is that the best kind of life is a life not of just talking and not of just listening, but of talking and responding. And we can talk about human relationships, how we need to get our act together better as far as that goes. But here we're not talking about the horizontal, we're talking about the vertical. And the picture is in the incense altar of prayers arising to God, people talking to him. This is an amazing thing, let me just say parenthetically. The fact that you have a God who can listen to all those prayers of all those people all at once and process them all and create coherence and answers is an amazing thing. But that's what it means to be God. That's just the way he is. And so it's a fabulous thing. But let me tell you about Moses' situation. In the Parsha, after we read about the incense altar and this conclusion of the furnishings and things, we have an incident called the golden calf. Are you familiar with this one? You're familiar with the golden calf. So the long and short of it was that Moses needed to go be with God to receive the Torah and to get the tablets, the Luchot, the tablets with the Ten Commandments written on stone. And he goes up, but he's gone for a long time. And so the people begin to say, we don't know what's happening with this Moses. Where'd he go? Who knows? And they were getting nervous because the leader wasn't around. And somebody had the bright idea of let's build a golden calf. In fact, it was Aaron, and he said to the people, give me your gold and your jewelry, and he fashions a golden calf. Don't think that Aaron was trying to be an idolater, but God had just said 5 minutes ago, don't make any graven images of things to bow down before, because you're not supposed to do that, because no matter what you make, it's not going to be good enough to represent me, so don't do that. And so Moses is up there, and there's the sound of revelry in the camp. So not only were they building the golden calf, but they were having something of an orgy. We don't know exactly what it was like, but whatever it was, it wasn't good at all. And so Moses is terribly, terribly disappointed and angry. And what does he do with those stone tablets? Do you remember when he comes down? He smashes them. You ever get mad and smash? You know, it can happen. I can't think of the last time I've smashed anything. I don't recommend it. But he was extremely angry, extremely disappointed. This is right after the Sinai incident, you know, the mountain smoking and God showing up and the people saying, oh, we will listen, we will obey, all that. So he's profoundly disappointed. And, you know, it's a real traumatic thing for him, because then he goes to God and pleads on behalf of the people and casts about in his mind, what can I say to God? And he says, God, listen, please don't destroy these people, because the surrounding peoples will just make fun of your name. You won't receive the glory that you deserve by the surrounding peoples. Please don't destroy the people. It's a traumatic, traumatic, anger-filled, confusion-filled episode. And on top of this, Moses is presented as a figure kind of caught between two worlds. He's not comfortable relating to the people the way he has been called to do. As a matter of fact, when God first calls him, Moses says, listen, I can't speak. I stammer. I'm just not good in front of people. I'm not a good speaker. And God says, that's okay. You know, you'll go anyhow. So he's caught in this liminal, this kind of no man's land, leading the people yet not being part of them in a sense, and not being able to relate to them. And there's this low-grade hostility that they express, sometimes not so low-grade. And also, he's on earth. He's not with God. He's kind of caught in this space. And the whole thing is very, very difficult for him, as you can imagine. So he really is caught between two worlds. And it's a wonderful, I won't take the time, Aviva Zornberg has this great discussion of Moses caught between two worlds, and I can share it with you later. Now, we're talking about conversation. The incense altar, the prayer rises to God, but it also goes the other way too. And that is, God talks to us. And in this passage, you have this conversation between God and Moses, where God says, okay, I won't destroy the people. You will lead them. And Moses says, well, you've got to go with us, because if you don't go with us, I just can't make it. Your presence has to go with us. So Moses, in this very vulnerable point, God is speaking to him, but then he speaks to him in a way that Moses really needed. He speaks to him not with words, but with an experience. And we read about it in the Torah, where it says, the Lord said, I will cause my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. And then he reminds himself, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy. I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. But he said, you cannot see my face, for no one can see my face and live. So there's something about seeing the full disclosure of God and who he is that we can't take. We can't deal with it. Then the Lord said, there is a place near to me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock and will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face you must not see. So what do we have here? The picture of the altar and the incense rising before God. But the picture of God speaking to Moses, and in this case speaking to him, I'm speaking a bit, talking a bit metaphorically here, where he speaks to him by really meeting Moses' need. Moses needed to see something of God's presence to be assured that God was really with him and that he was going to take him the full distance to the promised land. And so God, in his kindness and mercy, relates, speaks to Moses and meets him. Okay. Now, on this point, I want to talk with you about God speaking and how he speaks to us, just for a moment. And I'm not going to get into any kind of exhaustive subject here, but how he speaks and relates. So the other day, sorry, got off the plane in the United States, 6 o'clock in the morning, we're all blind tired, right? We're really tired, because it was an all-night flight, 12-hour flight this way. And we're tired, and in the seat pocket in front of me, I knew I had some things. I knew I had my iPad, and I had my glasses, and I got them out and put them in my backpack. And it was only at 10 o'clock that morning, while I'm on a conference call, that I realized, oh no, I left my phone on the plane. You ever do it?
Yeah.
Well, I hope you don't. Yeah, some of you have. And there, so I'm imagining the plane flying back to Israel with my phone, and phones are not cheap. So Sue and I, in the afternoon, figured we'd go to El Al, and we'd ask them, if they found my phone. We got there, there's no one there. And someone told us that at El Al, they never show up until there's a flight ready to go. And then the stewardesses and the staff come. So we went. So we were going to come back at night. I told Sue, listen, don't you drive back again. I'll hop on the train. I will go. I will look for my phone. You stay home. You know, we're exhausted after the trip. So I go down, and I go upstairs to the ticket counter, and there is nobody there again. There's nobody at the El Al booth. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do? So there was a door that led into the back, and I knew I wasn't supposed to be there, but I didn't care. So I just went back there, and there was a long corridor that must be behind the ticket booths that stretches the whole length of Terminal E. I mean, it's as long as can be. It's kind of weird. You're just looking and looking, and it doesn't seem to end. And I noticed maybe 100 feet down there was one person that was... It was empty, but I noticed a person, and I ran down, and there was a young lady, and I said, excuse me, I lost my phone. She said, you're not supposed to be here. I said, I know. Let me just tell you, I left my phone on an LL flight last night, and she says, well, you know, you're going to have to talk to someone at LL. I said, there's nobody there. And she said, well, wait a minute, I see somebody. And back, almost 100 feet back in the direction that I came, I could see with my eyesight, it wasn't so easy, but I saw a guy. And she says, I think he might be with El Al. So I ran back, and I didn't see what office he went into, but I took a chance and knocked on one of the doors, and a young, smiley guy answers, goes, excuse, and I said, excuse me, I know I'm not supposed to be back here, but I left my plane on flight 15 from Tel Aviv last night. He goes, are you rich? Are you a rabbi? I went, yeah, that's me. He says, I was just about to try and figure out how to get this phone to somebody. So you had to be there. You know what I mean? Now, again, some of you say, well, sometimes in the explanation, it doesn't have the force that when you're living it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You try and explain these things, and it sounds good, but you had to be there. It had this feeling of God just responding to me, speaking to me in his providence, orchestrating the circumstances. It's one of those things that when you're a believer in Yeshua and you have his ruach, you begin to see these, experience these things all the time, where before... It's like you just chalk it up to happenstance and it doesn't happen much. You're just desensitized to these realities for the most part. Although there are some people who do have a sensibility about these kind of serendipities. But you know, for me, this was, you know, rather common. And I just thanked him for speaking to me in a way that I needed to be heard at that point. Can you relate to what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
See, he speaks.
Absolutely.
He speaks. We speak and he speaks. So... I want to talk with you about speaking and listening in a very practical term, just for a couple minutes, okay? Very practically. When we were in Jerusalem, we took the gang to the Messianic Jewish synagogue that we enjoy the most in Jerusalem, and we got there, and the place was packed, and it's just been newly remodeled, very nice. But of course, you're living in Israel, lots and lots of Hebrew in the service. But did you notice, those of you who were on the trip, that a lot of it you knew, right? Because we speak in a common language as Jews, and no matter where you are, whether you're in Israel at this congregation called Nativia, or whether you're in Bangkok or Brooklyn or Boston, you can enter a service, and if you know the liturgy, you can speak to God in the presence of all these other Jews. And that is great speaking. And I want to just encourage you. That's one of the reasons we teach Hebrew here and one of the reasons it is to learn these things. So it was a great experience. Now, speaking to God, speaking. The liturgy, great way to speak. But there's another way we speak to him, and that is in spontaneous prayer. See, both are good, and you need both. I just want to, it's not a seminar time, so let me just make one suggestion about the speaking to God. When you're speaking to him, let it all hang out. What do I mean by that? It means that within the framework, of course, a measure of respect, you're standing before the King of the universe, he knows every one of your thoughts before you think them, or as you think them. He knows it all. And I want to encourage you that intimacy with him means saying to him, for example, I'm making this up, but it's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. God, I am really, really angry. Because I thought I was going to get that job. And all the signs look like it. And they gave it to someone I know is not as qualified as me. And God, I'm mad about it. I'm upset about it. And I just want you to know that. Do you think that's a sinful prayer?
No.
Not at all. Not at all. You let it hang out. If you read the Parsha this week, you find Moses letting it hang out too. Now, there are boundaries and there's no rules here. It's just you're standing before the King of the universe, but there is an intimacy that we can have with him that's very important to cultivate and will have a spillover effect into your horizontal and your relationships with other people, because it's very important that intimacy, to some extent, is a function of being really willing to let others know how you really feel and not to be afraid and not to be intimidated. Doesn't being mean-spirited. Then we're not talking about being mean, but we're talking about being real. So a suggestion about how to talk to God, how to hear from him, be aware of those serendipities, be aware of those things where he's orchestrating providence, just like Moses was met, his need was met by God at the incident where God meets him and shows him his back. So the value and holiness of the incense offered on the altar speaks to the value of real conversation with God. The effort he took to speak to Moses at the time of his greatest vulnerability speaks of the premium he places on conversing with us. Now, the life worth living, because at the end of the day, I want you here to learn how to live. I'm not interested in you just learning theology for its own sake. That, in 60 cents, you know, is not all that helpful. But learning how to live, okay? The life worth living, the best kind of life, is when our conversation with one another rises above the trivial and we talk courageously and we listen courageously. And I want to encourage especially you guys, learn to ask questions when you speak to people and just don't jump in with this implicit one-upmanship that destroys real communication. You'll be a much happier man if you learn how to do this, okay? Women are better at it than guys, but women might be able to grow in this area too. And the life worth living is filled with conversation with God and listening to what he's saying in scripture and in tradition, of course, through the voice of other people, and that intuitive sense granted by the Ruach when he just orchestrates circumstances and says, I'm with you, I'm with you, I'm really with you. Learn to hear his voice. Learn to speak well with him and with one another. And you're going to be a happy human being. What could be better? Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.